only 0.1% women knows about LAM, because these women maybe migrated from the intervention village to comparison village, and she received the counseling on LAM in community mobilization meeting.
I'm puzzled by the promotion of LAM in a population where 75%, as I read it, say they want no more children. It seems to me that it's a really inefficient method to be used by women who want to terminate, not space their next pregnancies. Yeah, why did you choose to want LAM in that particular population?
Yeah. In Bangladesh, government are mainly focusing on limiting the family size. But you know, for the religious barrier, these family planning methods are not well accepted in some parts of Bangladesh, all over the Bangladesh, but especially in Sylhet, where we are conducting our study. And for the religious barrier, they are not accepted permanent method or long-term method as well. When we are focusing our counseling on spacing is beneficial for mother and newborn, then the religious leaders are accepted to approve the family planning methods. So we think if we are promoting LAM, then we are also promoting transition from LAM to other methods. So by this way, they can space their birth spacing, and when they will sensitize, then they will accept the permanent method.
So you intend to follow on to see whether they do?
Yes, we will follow up till 36 months of birth.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, sure.
We've worked together, but also they've instituted additional visits to ensure that women do transition to land. So where originally the community health workers were stuck earlier on in the postpartum period, now they've added visits so they can actually really follow up and see our women transitioning and what happens to the transition.
All right, please welcome our next speaker, and we'll have some time at the end for discussion. Catherine Tomlinson.
You can either do that or you can click the mouse, whatever.
Okay, great. Yeah. Good morning. My name is Kat Tomlinson. I'm a technical officer at Family Health International, and I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to speak with all of you this morning on the topic of postpartum and post-abortion family planning. Over the next 15 minutes, I'll be presenting the results of a study that I conducted in Peru in 2007 while working for Pathfinder International. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Now, for me, it's hard to talk about family planning without first talking about the International Conference on Population and Development in Cairo in 1994, which, as I'm sure many of you already know, radically changed the way we think about family planning. Prior to the Cairo Conference, some family planning programs used coercive policies in order to achieve demographic targets. In contrast, the Cairo Conference promoted a woman's right to choose the number and spacing of her children. And in addition, the Cairo Conference advocated putting family planning services within reach of all citizens and called on governments to do their part. However, despite widespread support for the goals of the Cairo Conference, nearly 15 years later, many women living in poor countries are still without the services they need to prevent unintended pregnancy. According to a 2007 report from the Guttmacher Institute, more than 1 in 7 women living in developing countries has an unmet need for family planning. Now, when we talk about unmet need for family planning, what we're talking about is the percentage or the proportion of women who want to avoid pregnancy but are not using any method of contraception. And the question is, why should we be concerned about unmet need? Well, the answer to this is that 70 to 80 million unintended pregnancies occur every year in developing countries due to unmet need. Now, in such settings where perinatal services are limited, high rates of unintended pregnancy can pose a life and death situation for mothers and their infants, where maternal and infant mortality rates are so high. In addition, unmet need is also associated with very high rates of unsafe abortion, which in turn is also a major contributor to maternal mortality in many developing countries. Now, I'd like to use this next slide to shift our attention from the global consequences of unmet need in order to talk about how unmet need affects women living in Peru. Now, researchers vary in their estimates, but some say that as many as 1 in 6 women of reproductive age in Peru has an unmet need for family planning. And what this means is that more than 500,000 women in Peru are not protected against unintended pregnancy. It's likely that Peru's high rate of unmet need contributes to its very high rates of maternal and infant mortality, as well as unsafe abortion, which are some of the highest in the region of Latin America. As you can see from this slide, in 2002 alone, more than 350,000 illegal unsafe abortions occurred in Peru. Now, Peru's government has been responsive to the need to provide information to their citizens on family planning. The Ministry of Health has created a national strategy on sexual and reproductive health, which requires public health facilities to provide 100% of postpartum and post-abortion patients with a family planning counseling session. Yet despite this policy, unmet need in Peru remains high. So the question emerges, if supportive policies are in place, why are there still so many women in Peru with an unmet need for family planning? So in order to better understand the causes of unmet need in Peru, I developed 2 research questions, the first of which is, why are women in Peru not using contraception despite a demonstrated desire to avoid or delay pregnancy? And what is the quality of the family planning counseling sessions that these women are receiving in the postpartum and post-abortion setting? So to answer these 2 questions, I designed and implemented a survey in 6 public health facilities in 4 regions of Peru between December 2006 and February 2007. This was a descriptive study which investigated causes of unmet need and measured quality of family planning counseling in a convenient sample of 100 postpartum and 30 post-abortion patients. I collected all the survey data myself through face-to-face interviews. So I started by asking women in the postpartum and post-abortion sections of various public health facilities if their recent pregnancy was intended or unintended. Now, for those women with an unintended pregnancy, I asked them if they had been using contraception in order to prevent their recent unintended pregnancy. And when I analyzed my data, what I found out was that 1 in every 4 women that I spoke with had experienced an unintended pregnancy and had not been using contraception. In other words, their recent pregnancy was the result of unmet need. So then I asked those women, those 1 in 4 with unmet need, why they had not been using contraception to avoid their recent unintended pregnancy, and the results are shown in this pie graph. As you can see from this graph, the largest slice of the pie takes up 26% of the chart. It's that section in purple. This is the percentage of women who told me that they had not been using family planning because they simply did not know of any method that they could use. Now, another 20% of the women that I spoke with told me that they had not been using family planning because they were afraid of side effects. And then another 18 told me that they were not using family planning because they didn't really think that they would actually get pregnant. Now, these first 3 factors that I'm discussing take up 64% of this pie. It's sort of the whole right-hand side and a little bit of the part on the bottom where the yellow section is. And the fact that the majority of unmet need in this population, within the population, can be attributed to these three causes was a very interesting finding to me, because all 3 of these are things that could easily be addressed in a high-quality family planning counseling session. Providing information about available methods, explaining how to manage side effects, and explaining the likelihood of conception and the absence of family planning are important components of a high-quality family planning counseling session. Moving on to the rest of the pie in clockwise rotation, 12% of the patients that I spoke with who were not using contraception told me it was because their partners did not want to use any family planning. Another 12% told me they weren't using contraception, even though they didn't want to get pregnant, because they didn't really feel that they had sex often enough to really need a regular method, which in this case turned out not to be true. And then 9% of the women that I spoke with simply weren't able to answer the question. They told me they just didn't know why they weren't using it. And finally, very few women, only 3% of the women I spoke with, reported that they couldn't get to a facility that provided contraception. Now, I don't show the data here, but I do want to point out that more than 90% of the women that I interviewed told me that they were able to reach a facility that provided family planning within 15 minutes of where they lived, either by walking, taking the bus, a taxi, or a private car if that was available to them. Now, of course, there are many women living in extremely remote areas of Peru who can't access family planning quite so easily, but I feel that these results at least suggest that unmet need cannot simply be explained by geographic inaccessibility. In addition, I think it's also very interesting to note that not a single woman that I spoke with told me that the reason she wasn't using family planning was because she couldn't afford it. Now, again, this doesn't indicate that financial barriers don't exist, but as with geographic barriers, it does at least suggest that such barriers are not a primary cause of unmet need in this setting. Now, before moving on to my second research question about the quality of family planning counseling session that these women received, I first asked each woman that I spoke with if her doctor, nurse, or obstetrician had talked to her about family planning. So in other words, before measuring the quality of the family planning counseling sessions, my survey sought to verify that these services were actually being provided, and my results were surprising. Despite a national standard that requires that all postpartum and post-abortion patients receive a family planning counseling session, 38% of all the women I spoke with received no family planning information. Broken down by category, this means that 31% of the postpartum and 63% of post-abortion patients were not offered a family planning counseling session. Now, in particular with respect to the post-abortion patients, this result was especially disturbing to me when you consider that in Peru, abortion is illegal and very unsafe, and so a woman must risk her life and in some cases her social standing in order to obtain an abortion, and yet she is allowed to leave the medical facility that provided her with post-abortion care without receiving any information on how to avoid additional unwanted pregnancy. Now, as we saw on the previous slide, 38% of the women that I spoke with received no family planning counseling, but if we do the math, it tells us that, well, okay, there were 62% who did receive family planning counseling sessions, and so I modified a framework first developed by Judith Bruce of the Population Council in 1990, and I used this modified framework to try to measure the quality of the family planning counseling that these women, the 62% of women, did receive. So I used six components, which are listed on the right-hand side of the graph on this slide, and I'll just go through those quickly. So I defined a high-quality family planning counseling session as one in which a woman received a choice of methods, which in this case I defined as being told about three or more methods, whether or not she was given information on the benefits and possible side effects of the methods that she was interested in, being given instructions on how to use her chosen method, and given assistance with selecting a method that was appropriate for her, being treated with respect, and being given instructions on when to initiate and how to continue her chosen method. Now, as you can see from Table 2, some of these components were nearly universally provided to patients, which is great. So, for example, if you look at the bar on the far left, it's kind of purple, violet color, 98% of the patients who were lucky enough to receive a family planning counseling session were provided with information on three or more methods. And 95%, that sort of salmon-colored bar, the second highest bar, that percentage of patients were reported that they were treated with respect. So this is great. However, other important components of a quality family planning counseling session were not reported by patients. So if you look at the second bar to the left, 32% of patients were offered information on the benefits and the possible side effects. And only 70%, moving to the next bar, were instructed on how to use their chosen method. 75% were offered assistance in selecting the most appropriate method for their situation, and 77% were given information on how to initiate and how to continue their method. These are fairly suboptimal rates, but most problematically, only 22% of the women who were lucky enough to actually receive family planning counseling reported to me that they got all six of these components. So this means that of the 62% who received family planning, almost 80% of those received a quality of family planning counseling that was very suboptimal. So just to conclude my presentation of this study on postpartum and post-abortion family planning in Peru, I'd like to review some of the key findings. One out of every four women that I interviewed had an unmet need for family planning. A significant percentage of unmet need within my survey population was the result of lack of information. Despite a national standard guaranteeing family planning information to 100% of postpartum and post-abortion patients, 38% received no information at all. And of the 62% who did receive information, 22% received low-quality family planning counseling. Now, supportive policies like the one in Peru are a critical component of a successful family planning program. However, clearly more steps are needed to ensure universal access to family planning. Bringing us back to our original conversation about the Cairo conference, I'd like to ask an important reproductive rights question, which is, what is it that women and their families want? I think the findings presented here indicate that women want fewer children and they want the information necessary to prevent unintended pregnancies. And this point is illustrated by a conversation I had with a post-abortion patient in Lima who told me she really wishes someone had spoken to her about family planning when she was a younger woman. She told me that if this had happened, she knows that she would not have had four children. She would have had only two. Now, before closing and ceding this to my fellow panelists, I'd just like to present a few recommended strategies for getting high-quality family planning into the service delivery setting so that supportive policies are able to deliver their intended results. First, medical and nursing school curricula should be updated to include and emphasize postpartum and post-abortion family planning. It would also be very useful, I think, to conduct additional research to understand why some service providers are choosing not to provide family planning counseling. Is it because they're short-staffed? Is it due to a cultural or religious objection to providing these services? And then we might be able to figure out how to motivate these providers to change their practice so that they are in compliance with their national guidelines. In addition, systems of monitoring providers may be needed so that supervisors and administrators can be aware when their staff are not adhering to national guidelines. And finally, and perhaps most challenging of all, we need to start empowering women to know and understand their reproductive rights. This may decrease the chances that they will be denied services in the future and could also increase opportunities for women and their families to have the quality of life that they want and deserve. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to take any clarification questions at this time. Yes, Sarah. Right.
And solving that discontinuation issue has certain other implications.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's such an important point, Sarah. I'm glad that you brought that up. Of the women that I interviewed, about half had an unintended pregnancy, and half of those had been using a method and had discontinued it, either due to side effects or method failure. Does that answer your question? I'd be happy to talk with you more about it later. Yes, in the front in the blue shirt. Absolutely. Right. You know, I had about 10 minutes with each patient to talk to them, so my time was a little bit limited. But I, you know, I did find that the certain percentage, 20%, did indicate that they had this fear of side effects. And I wasn't able to really give more education at that point, but I do think that that's something that would be effective. Absolutely. Absolutely. Weight gain was a major one. Of course, you know, obviously you gain a lot of weight when you get pregnant. So that seemed to be the main one. There was some concern about mood changes and feeling like they might be crazy if they were to be on a method. Some of the things that were just sort of rumors that had circulated among their social groups. in the red shirt? No one. Remarkable. In a highly Catholic country. I was surprised as well. I was actually, my hypothesis was that that was what I would find, but that wasn't what anyone, now, you know, there's always a possibility this is self-reported, so maybe people were giving me different information than was actually accurate, but again, you know, we do have to rely a little bit on women's ability to report. Yes?
And yet Peru, which is strongly Catholic as well, has its in the law books, and yet the providers don't continue, I mean, they continue not to provide family planning services. I think that's something that would be interesting to look at.
I agree. I think it would be very interesting to have more research on that to figure out what's going on with these providers. Are they just really busy and they can't get to everyone, which is understandable, or is it, you know, due to cultural or religious ideas against family planning? And the woman in the pink shirt?
You said that there were six facilities that you went to. Were they all in Lima, Peru?
No, they were in... A total, I surveyed 130 women. The six facilities were in four different regions, so I was in Lima, Tarapoto, Huánuco, and Cusco. And the back in the white shirt? Sure. I simply asked them if their pregnancy was planned or unplanned.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you had a question in the front.
I was just curious about the women who I didn't know they could get pregnant. And a lot of times we're working with women understanding when they can become pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I wish that in the original design of my survey instrument that I had built something in to measure that, but at that time I hadn't thought of that yet. But it would be very interesting to know. I think that's a great idea and an important question. Is it because they had a misunderstanding of their fertility awareness, or was it just this, thinking they were invincible to pregnancy? It would be important to realize that. Yes? I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe the most popular method in the women that I spoke with when they talked about what method they would want to use next was DMPA, and then followed closely by COCs. And yes, the gentleman in the back? That's a great point. That's a great point. Clearly, yeah. I mean, some of these clinics were in, you know, well, actually most of them were in fairly populous center cities. So, yeah, absolutely. Women living in rural areas would definitely have a much harder time accessing services. And I have heard of women having to walk, you know, 2 to 3 hours to get to a facility. So that is a very important point. I'm glad that you raised. Any additional questions? John, stand back. Right. 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 No, I don't know what percentage. I was mainly going to, you know, maternity centers and public health facilities and going into the postpartum and post-abortion sections of those. So I'm not aware of what the percentages would be. Thank you all very much.